Welcome to episode 642 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. And this week, it's a Josh Pollard solo show. No, Richard, he is away this week preparing for South by Southwest. So very excited for him to be able to do that this week. If you are watching this on YouTube right now, then I would invite you, please go ahead and click that like button and the subscribe button so that you won't ever have to miss a single episode of the show. Do want to welcome back a longtime listener of the show that we haven't heard from in a long, long time as we kick off the feedback segment of the show. We got this email from our friend, who we lovingly refer to as Captain Lawn Paul. He sent this into our email box at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And Paul said, "Richard, have you thought about doing a parent account on the Google TV with Chromecast that you have in your rental property? It would give guests access to services, but they wouldn't be allowed to purchase or adjust anything." Interesting idea there. And that's definitely something that Richard is going to consider. He also said, by the way, Hulu is a great way to access broadcast/live TV. And he's really talking about the Hulu with live TV option there, which I believe is $65 a month, if I've got that in the back of my brain correctly. He says it comes with tons of DVR space, which you barely even have to use because Hulu has most shows next day streaming anyway. So don't even DVR it because it's Hulu. So of course it's got the shows the next day for most things. He then switches his focus to asking me questions. He asks, "How's your Sea of Thieves going? There's almost too much to do there now. Josh should give it another look." Paul, I think that ship has set sail. I do not have any intention of going back to Sea of Thieves anytime soon. Sorry, friend. And then lastly, he asks, have either of you tried the show Resident Alien? He says it's very good. It's like a great corny dad joke, which, you know, that actually does sound pretty good as a dad who's known for making dad jokes. He says the first two seasons are on Netflix now. He does warn that season two has a few episodes that drag on, but the season finishes very strong. I've never even heard of the show Resident Alien, but my guess is this will go in Richard's queue as he tends to watch a lot more shows than I do anyway. So anyway, thank you to Paul for reaching out. It's great to hear from you again. We love your questions. We love your feedback on things. So please hit us up with any of your feedback. Entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com is the email address. We'll get into all of our contact information at the end of the show. It's in the show notes. Just go to thedigitalmediazone.com and you'll find all of it over there. Okay, so let's start with video news like we normally do around here. And we're going to start with a story that I found a little bit odd when it crossed the news wires. And that is that Apple TV Plus subscribers who are in the US are now going to be getting access to over 50 movies as part of their existing Apple TV Plus subscription. So your normal $9.99 a month Apple TV subscription that you've been using to watch all sorts of great TV shows like Ted Lasso or Silo or many of the other shows that are on Apple TV Plus, now there's going to be some movies, but it's only 50. So this isn't like you're going to be swapping out Netflix or Amazon Prime Video for a massive movie catalog. It's 50. And it's an interesting 50. It's mostly movies that you've probably heard of before. Some of the examples: Mad Max Fury Road, A Star is Born, Titanic, Con Air, The Bodyguard, Zoolander, Jurassic World, Edge of Tomorrow, Gravity. These are all pretty well-known movies, but you know what they aren't? recent. Like, all of these movies are pretty old at this point. And maybe that's okay. Like, if you're just looking to rewatch a movie that you know you love, and maybe most importantly, not have to deal with the decision fatigue that comes with opening up Netflix and just trying to find something to watch. When you've got a catalog of thousands, it can introduce paralysis in trying to make the right decision. So this won't leave you feeling like you're stuck in that state with only 50 movies in there. It's also interesting that while it's a small catalog, it's also a catalog that looks like it might be more of a rotating library of titles, because some of these titles will only be available to stream like through the end of March, and some of them expiring in April. And so I'm hoping, thinking that as those movies roll out, they'll be rolling new movies in, because if they're only starting with 50-ish and they're going to drop a few more at the end of this month and a few more in April, there aren't going to be many left in a few months from now. So it'll be interesting to keep an eye on that. While these are older movies, many of them are available in 4K, which is of course, basically like required at this point, I think. And although it's worth pointing out that to get movies in 4K on Netflix and some of the other providers like Max and things like that, you have to pay for the top tier service to get access to them in 4K. And in this, they're just included with the base $9.99 a month subscription. The other interesting thing worth pointing out to like two of you is that some of these movies like Jurassic World, Edge of Tomorrow, and Gravity are available in 3D for you to watch on your Apple Vision Pro. So that is a very, very small segment of people out there. Although I would bet that the vast, vast majority of people who own an Apple Vision Pro are also Apple TV Plus subscribers, because you have to be an ultra hardcore Apple fan to be paying $3,500 for an Apple Vision Pro. So there you go. There's your Apple TV Plus news for the week. Let us know if you see a lot of benefit to this, and really let us know if you're going to watch any of those movies in 3D on your Apple Vision Pro. Would love to hear about that. Okay, moving on to a couple of audio stories this week. And I think both of these are really interesting stories, but definitely the first one. Tidal is making a major change to their subscription plans. And frankly, this change might be the first of its kind that we've seen ever in the history of subscription plans. It's not actually, but it's certainly the only one of its kind that's happened in the last few years. So what's going on here? So for the last few years, Tidal, which is known specifically as a music streaming service geared at audiophiles, the people who want to be listening to their music at the highest possible audio fidelity. And Tidal was offering hi-fi music streaming before any of the other competitors, and you paid for it. So over the last couple of years, they did switch up their plans a little bit, and they switched it to a two-tiered system where there was a plan called Hi-Fi and a plan called Hi-Fi Plus. And Hi-Fi Plus was the one that you wanted if you were really interested in Tidal, because that was the one that it included lossless FLAC audio formats and supported Dolby Atmos mixes for some titles in the catalog. But it was $20 a month, you know, about double the cost of the regular plan and almost double the cost of all of their competitors. Well, the biggest thing that's happened in the last couple of years is their biggest, well, most of their biggest competitors, primarily being Apple and Amazon Music Services, have started offering hi-fi, you know, what they're calling lossless audio in their base plans and not charging any extra for them. So for $11 a month, you get access to hi-fi high quality lossless audio on Apple and Amazon. And so the real surprise here is that Tidal is decreasing the number of plans that they have. Those two, the Hi-Fi and the Hi-Fi Plus tier, they're both going away. And instead, they're going to be replaced with a single plan that is just called Tidal, and it's $11 a month. Let that sink in for a second. A streaming music service in 2024 just reduced the cost of their service by almost half, going from basically $20 a month to essentially $11 a month. Wow. And so you must be thinking, well, then they must be removing a bunch of features. Maybe it's not lossless anymore. Well, no, that's not the case, actually. It's still the lossless audio. It's still the Dolby Atmos mixes. You get all of that. The only thing that they're really removing is this DJ integration. And what I wasn't really able to tell, because I'm not a Tidal user, is which specific DJ-focused feature that is, because they have two sets of things that both refer to DJ services. One is for people who want to hook up to their DJ play decks and like DJ an event, like live in-person sort of thing. But they also have a service where you can just share out a link while you are listening to a playlist that you've created, and then any other Tidal subscriber, it doesn't need to be a friend, this isn't a social thing, you just give them a link, and anybody with a Tidal subscription can listen along to what you're playing. It's kind of a cool feature. I'm not sure which one of these DJ features that we're talking about here, but if you use whichever one it is and want to continue to use it, they are going to charge extra for that. And that will be an additional $10 a month. And if you're a Tidal fan who has used that feature in the last 90 days, they're automatically going to opt you into that add-on. It's being viewed as an add-on now. Now, you can remove it, but you will automatically be signed into that so that you don't lose that functionality. You know, you can spin that either way. Either they're opting you into spending more money, or they're opting you in so that you don't lose functionality that you've gotten used to. I guess I could go either way on that. The other big thing that I think they're changing here is they're simplifying the family plan. And really, by simplify, I really just mean reducing the cost of that too, because the Tidal family plan has been $30 a month, and now it's dropping to $17 a month, the same as Spotify's family plan. So this is all great news. Like, if you are a Tidal family plan subscriber or a Tidal Hi-Fi Plus subscriber, everything is getting cheaper for you. As long as you don't use that DJ feature, it's getting significantly cheaper for you and basically making it cost the same as the main competing services. And I feel like we have to mention the fact that it has now been 3 years since Spotify officially publicly announced they would be bringing lossless audio to their service, and they still haven't. But Apple has and Amazon has, and this pricing is completely in line with those two services. There are a couple of other changes being made here. So, two things that are going away. There's been a free ad-supported tier of Tidal. That's going away. They're just not dealing with that anymore, which is kind of an interesting choice. To me, this says no one's using it, because lots of services are adding ad-supported models, because in a lot of cases, they're able to generate more revenue from the ads than they are from paying subscribers. So this just screams no one is using the ad-supported model, and it just doesn't justify the cost of maintaining those ad partnerships and things like that. So the free ad tier will be gone. The other thing that is going away, and I think this one kind of sucks, although it doesn't apply to me, they've for a long time had a discount for military members and first responders, and they're getting rid of that. That seems crappy. Like, just keep it around, guys. Come on. One thing that isn't changing is their student plan. If you're a verifiable student, then you can get access to the service for only $5 a month. And then the last important detail on this story, these changes all go into effect on April 10th. So let's talk about Spotify, because they're also making a change to their subscription offerings. But for them, they're adding a new plan. And it's a really, really interesting plan. So late in 2023, Spotify added audiobooks to their catalog. If you are a Spotify Premium subscriber, you could get access to up to 15 hours of streaming audiobooks through the service. And it's a pretty large catalog, 200,000 titles. It's not everything, but no services. It's got a lot, but not everything. And 15 hours a month is going to get you basically a book a month. You know, there are shorter books for sure. You know, maybe you found 2 7-hour books and you were able to get through those in 1 month, but I listen to a lot of audiobooks and most of them are, frankly, most of them are between 10 and 25 hours. So it just depends on what you're reading / listening to, whether that would work for you. Now, when they rolled this out, what they found was that a lot of Spotify free plan subscribers were trying to click into and engage with the audiobooks, but they aren't available to the free plan. So what they decided to do was, let's roll out a plan specifically targeted at audiobook listeners. So that's what they're doing here. It's a new audiobook access tier, and it gives you that 15 hours of audiobooks per month. But in terms of music, it's still just like the free music tier. So you get access to music, but it's all ad supported and you don't get any of the extra benefits that a typical Spotify premium subscription brings with it. So what does this cost you? That's another area where I think this gets interesting. It's $10 a month. And your first reaction is probably $10 a month. Spotify Premium is $11 a month. Why wouldn't I just pay the extra dollar and get all of the access to Spotify Premium music, like not having to listen to ads? Well, I think the thing that they're hoping here is that this is probably more targeted at taking consumers away from Audible than trying to get more people to pay for the music subscription. Because Audible is the only real competitor to Spotify's audiobook subscription service. Or maybe that's not fair. I think it's the most fair thing to say there is Audible is the biggest competitor to Spotify's audiobook subscription service. So how does Audible work? Which, by the way, Audible is owned by Amazon. With Audible, users pay $15 a month and they get access to a credit, which they can use to purchase any, with a big asterisk next to it, any audiobook. It's not exactly any, because really, really long audiobooks are sometimes 2 credits, but it's, you know, the vast majority of their catalog is 1 credit. So it could be 20, 25 hour, 30 hour books, still be 1 credit, and you do get access to them. The other big difference there is with Audible, it is a purchase. You own that book forever. You can listen to it as many times as you want, whenever you want. Whereas with the Spotify subscription, it's 15 hours for the month and then you're done. Doesn't matter which books you're reading. None of that matters. You get 15 hours and then you're done. The other big difference with Audible, if you don't buy a book for that month, if you don't use the credit, it rolls over. So the next month you have 2 credits that you can use. With Spotify, if you only listen for 10 hours this month, you don't get an extra 5 next month. It still just starts over at 15 hours every single month. And again, you're not purchasing anything there. So they are pretty different plans, but Spotify is hoping, hey, that the fact that you're saving $5 a month is going to be enough to lure you in to subscribing to that service instead. Just like some of the other stories we've mentioned during this full episode, this is a US-only feature right now. On the gaming front, the story here, it really appeals to the very nerdiness of me. As many of you know, my day job is in software development. I have been a computer programmer for basically my entire life. I love writing code. I love everything related to it. And the story is really about that, in which case you might be thinking, then why are you talking about this, Josh? This isn't a computer programming podcast. It's because of the benefits. So let me tell you what's happening here. Microsoft is introducing a new part of their DirectX Gaming SDK. SDK stands for Software Development Kit, that is called DirectSR. The important thing to know about DirectX and this SDK nonsense that I'm talking about is it is a set of programming tools given to game developers to make it easier for them to write games in a way that doesn't make them focus on supporting lots of different types of hardware, different video cards, different headsets, different mice, different game controllers. All of those details can be completely abstracted away from the game developer so that they can just focus on making a great game that will run across a wide, wide selection of gaming hardware. That's what the DirectX libraries do. So what is this new one, DirectSR? And what does SR stand for? So SR stands for Super Resolution. And where this comes into play is all three of the major, I guess, all three of the major GPU providers out there. So NVIDIA is the biggest, right? Their GeForce line of video cards. AMD is number two in terms of GPU production. And then the third one would be Intel. They're kind of new to this in terms of hardcore gaming GPUs. All three of those companies have their own set of systems and technologies for doing what Microsoft is calling super resolution. On the NVIDIA side, it's called DLSS. On AMD, it's called Fidelity FX Super Resolution. And Intel calls it XESS. And so you're wondering, well, what the heck is super resolution? I think, you know, maybe you've heard of DLSS, but you don't really know what it means. Here's what it does. The idea is, if you want to run games at super high resolution and super high frame rates, you need a very, very powerful GPU, a really powerful video card in your computer. And really powerful video cards are really expensive. So what these manufacturers have done has found a way to basically use software to instead tell your computer, tell your video card to, instead of like rendering it natively at 4K, render it at 1080p or some lower resolution that's easier on the GPU, and then use, they always call it AI, you can argue about whether it's AI or not, but different algorithms to upscale the picture from there. So it starts as a lower resolution photo, which was easier for your hardware to render, and then they use algorithms to make it look like it's 4K or whatever resolution you're trying to view it at. And in general, it looks pretty good, but it doesn't look as good as if it was a native 4K render, but it looks pretty good and it runs at significantly faster frame rates. So it's a little bit of a trade-off for sure, but the frame rate advantage is pretty massive, especially for NVIDIA's DLSS. But the problem here is it's three completely different technologies. So most games only support one of these, if any of them, because it's a pain to try to write code that would support all of these. So that's where Microsoft's DirectSR framework comes in. Now, game developers will be able to just code against this DirectSR library, and then it will do all of the work for them to support NVIDIA DLSS and then AMD and Intel's frameworks. So it doesn't matter what hardware you have anymore. When DirectX came out in the late 90s, it was revolutionary and a game changer for video game development across the board. And this, while it's not as big as the original launch of DirectX was, this is pretty big because these super resolution technologies are they're really one of the biggest technologies that the that these manufacturers are competing with each other on. And if game publishers, game developers don't need to worry about supporting a specific one, then you can kind of pick and choose your video card based on other things. Now, maybe NVIDIA's is better than Intel's, or maybe AMD's is better than NVIDIA's. I don't know. But the nice thing is here, as engineers, as the game engineers work to support this Microsoft version of these things, you're probably going to get this sort of functionality regardless of which video card you get. And that's a huge win for both game developers and for you, the video game player, who just wants to get a decent price for a video card when they're building their expensive gaming PC. So pretty big win. More news to come on this at the Game Developer Conference, which is happening later this month. And then probably don't expect to see this in action in Windows for at least probably second half of this year. And plus, you've got to give the game developers time to build this into their games. But this will be a really nice thing to have in the coming years for sure. All right, let's jump into what's going on in my entertainment center. It's not a ton. On the gaming side, my friends and I decided to get all four of us together to check out Pal World. I was the only one who had played it previously. Actually, no, one of the other guys had. And so we got together this weekend, spent a few hours playing it. A couple of the other guys in the group have not been big survival game fans. One of them was. But I think across the board, everybody had a fun time. Although, again, I hosted the world, I created it, and I did the same thing with those guys as I did when I was playing solo. I basically turned off the survival mechanics. I made it so the hunger isn't really an issue. I made it so that if you die, you don't lose all of your stuff. Like, let's just make this a regular game, not a survival game. And I think we all enjoyed it even more because of that. You can say it's the lame, cheesy way of playing. I say, if it makes the game fun, it's the right way to play. So I think we're going to play more. I don't know that this is going to become like our absolute go-to that we're playing all the time, but everybody liked it enough to play it again for a second time. On the TV front, still working my way through The Expanse. I did do some more testing on the iPad issue that I described last week, where when I've been trying to watch Amazon Prime Video on my iPad connected to a computer monitor through a USB-C hub, that it just did screen mirroring instead of the normal thing where it just displays the video on the computer monitor in, you know, the full 16:9 aspect ratio. And I wondered, is this a problem with Amazon Prime Video's app? Or is it a problem with my hub or my iPad or something like that? Well, Netflix worked fine. It's doing the correct thing. So I'm pretty sure at this point, this is a problem with the Amazon Prime Video app. And I have a feeling it's related to them putting ads into the service. So that really sucks. And if this doesn't get fixed, when I'm done with The Expanse, I will be picking a show that is not on Amazon Prime Video as the next thing that I watch when I'm running on the treadmill. All right, and then books. I haven't gotten to finish The Lions of Lucerne, the book that I talked about last week, because I didn't finish it before I had to return the book, and it was on the wait list. So now I'm waiting to get it back. So I'll have to come back to The Lions of Lucerne by Brad Thor, which was a suggestion from a listener, David, on a previous episode. I do want to get that back and finish that book because I was enjoying it. So what I did instead was I mentioned a few months ago that my wife's favorite book series is called A Court of Thorns and Roses, ACOTAR, as they call it in the book community. And I read the first book in the series and I didn't love it. And she told me at the time, that's okay. That's normal. The first book isn't actually all that great. Most people agree it's not that great. And in fact, as I've done a little bit more research, most ACOTAR fans do appear to say book one, not the greatest, but the rest of the series, really good. So just give it a try. So I did start book two over the weekend, and I'm about halfway through it. And I do have to say, it's a lot better than the first book. But I will withhold my complete judgment until I finished it. But so far, it's pretty promising. So I was a doubter after finishing book one, but book two is making up for a lot of the flaws of book one. So they might be right. And when it comes to books, Jen is almost always right. She reads way more than I do. So I should definitely, just kind of give her the benefit of the doubt when it comes to books, even in genres like fantasy that aren't exactly my favorite. So I will keep you up to date on both of those books as I hopefully finish them soon. I have one more announcement before we get out of here for this week, and that is to share a fun little project that my daughter has been working on, which is a little film school that she's been taking as an 11-year-old for kids to learn how to make movies. And their program is now up, and they have shared trailers for the movies that they put out. And she is so excited. It is so fun. And so I am going to put a link to that trailer in the show notes. So make sure you head over to thedigitalmediazone.com to get the link to the 30-second trailer for Gia's project short movie. And when the full movie is out, I'll make sure to share that too. But that's going to do it for all of the news and what's going on in my entertainment center. So quickly, if you do want to get a hold of us, hopefully, if you're watching on YouTube right now, you've already clicked that subscribe button. And, you know, you can just go down there and click the comments and leave us a comment, and we'll see that too. You can email us, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm on Twitter @JoshPollard. So is the website @DigiMediaZone. Richard is on Mastodon @RichardGunther over there. We do try to do the show live, but the last couple of weeks that's been difficult. But when we do it for at least a few more weeks, it's probably going to remain on Wednesdays around 8:30 p.m. Eastern. And one other quick update, there definitely won't be a show next week. Neither Richard nor I can record next week, but we'll be back in 2 weeks to record the next episode, because that's going to do it for episode 642. I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.